it's spoiler in time. And because it's spoiler in time, I am required by law to tell you this is not Cord Killers. No, it's not. Cord Killers is a different show. It's a sister show or brother show. It's a sibling show of this show, which is about the things that we've watched. Cord Killers is all about how to watch things, what services to use. This is the show where we watch the stuff and we can't wait to talk about it. We're going to talk about season 5, episode 12 of Justified, season 2, episode 10 of The Expanse, season 1, episodes 3 and 4 of Legion, and the surprise launch of Rick and Morty season 3, episode 1. I'm Tom Merritt. Here to talk about it with me is Brian Brushwood.
Hey, man, I'm too busy basking in the joy of success of being so right about this year's movie draft. But wait, we got to introduce Movie League Mike, writer of the Crumb Dun, the Chat Realm, Chat Realm's Ridiculously Unofficial, and the rest. I forget.
Movie draft update memo.
Yes. Movie League Mike, for the uninitiated, has written the most insightful commentary about the movie draft. You have projections. You have opinions. So I say let's just jump right in to the movie draft.
And let me just tell you, folks, if you're not reading Mike Range's Crumb Dun, you're missing out. It's must read. I'm not even joking. Every time it comes out, I immediately drop whatever I'm doing and I read it.
Because it really is. It's right there in the moment. Like, I've done it live on air. Like, I've just tuned out so I can read it during Night Attack.
It's entertaining. It's educated, and it's about me. So it's three things that I really love in writing. And even if it's only two for you, I think you're still going to like it. The movie draft, that piece of thing that I can't, words hard, Brian Wright, Boss Baby, Ghost in Shell. Mostly write about Ghost in Shell. Boss Baby isn't far off what I expected, but Ghost in the Shell tanked.
Yeah, okay. So the bet, if you guys missed it, was I bet one juicy steak to Tom Merritt, who was convinced that Ghost in the Shell was going to outperform Boss Baby. But when I said that Boss Baby was going to do more than double Ghost in the Shell, and the reason I said it was because Ghost in the Shell is the adaptation of an anime, which usually is not a recipe for success. It's also rated R, which means it's going to limit the audience. And also, it's... there's controversy regarding the so-called whitewashing of the character, even though the people who made Ghost in the Shell said, no, Scarlett Johansson is great. It's a great telling of the story. All of that led to a fairly tepid launch of $18 million compared to The Boss Baby, which has been in every Happy Meal and every Subway kids meal and on every billboard in Los Angeles forever, launched with a mammoth $50 million launch. That's going to be a big get for Big and Tall.
The Boss Baby is not far off what I thought. I thought Ghost in the Shell was going to do more like 30 million. And projections for Boss Baby have been it's not going to do as well as your normal kids movie. It's going to do good, but not as well. And the projections for Ghost in the Shell had been like it's going to open to 30 million and it's going to do OK, which is why I was comfortable with that stake bet. But Boss Baby projections don't seem to be far off, but Ghost in the Shell projections so wrong. Mike, what do you make of all of this?
Yeah, I thought pre-the weekend, they had Ghost in the Shell and Boss Baby fairly close, actually, closer than I thought. And, I thought Boss Baby was originally maybe 80 million, then I bumped it to 100 million, and now it looks like it's going to cruise way past that, which I think is going to make the draft actually more interesting than I thought it was going to be too, which is more bad news for Tom.
Yeah, I got to tell you, like, as far as kids programming, next week it's going to be The Boss Baby versus Smurfs The Lost Village, and I can't imagine Smurfs have the juice to make a dent in Boss Baby. I feel like it's going to steamroll forward. I mean, I'm looking at 150 to 200 million maybe.
You want to make that 8-ounce steak a 16-ounce steak, bro?
No, dude, I'm taking my steak home.
Because I think Smurfs has a shot. I'm only marginally confident in this, but I think one of the reasons the Boss Baby projections may have been lower is that it does have to go right up against another kids movie the very next week.
If it gets past that, though, there's nothing for a couple of months, I think, kids wise.
Well, and that goes for the Smurfs too, right?
Yeah, right. But I don't know, Smurfs. I mean, I wasn't I had no desire to see the first ones. But we saw a preview for this one, and it looks like about $10.
Oh, wow.
Because you don't like it or because you don't think kids are going to go see it? Because Smurfs always gets that reaction from us. Well, and but, it always but, does well, better
but,
than
but previous
thinks.
Smurfs had star power. You had Neil Patrick Harris. You had a lot of reasons for adults to want to go.
Yeah, there's no live action this time at all.
Right, correct.
It's completely animated, and so it's, I don't know, it
or
looks
as
like
the billboard
Saturday
near my house says, fully animated.
I don't think Smurfs is going to be, I mean, at $7, I think it's going to do.
It'll be fine. Draft.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I spent almost nothing on it. It's not really going to be my make or break movie.
I'll tell you what,
it would have been nice
if
it overperforms. We'll see.
You're going to clean up on the Fate of the Furious, man. You're going to make
all
the money.
I'll tell you what, here's the thing. Here's the message you should be taking home, folks. Boss Baby's going to be crowded. Everybody's going to go see Boss Baby. Take the kids to see the Smurfs. It's just going to be easier.
You're just going to be surrounded by so much joy and laughter and people excited to be there. Who needs that?
Yeah, you don't want to deal with the crowds, you know, and not being able to get to your seat and the loudness. Yeah, go see Smurfs. It's going to be, no one will go see Smurfs, so you should.
Yeah, you start dipping into territory. You're like, these actors worked so hard, man. Come on.
No, I actually do think Smurfs the Lost Village is going to do fine, especially for $7. Like, I expect close to 20 mil, maybe probably a little under.
Yeah, we'll see.
Smurfs.
It'll outperform Ghost in the Shell.
You want to bet a stake on that?
That's where I was going with that. All right. Now, Mike, we know you didn't get in on the Rick and Morty preview action this weekend, but you're sure you don't mind being spoiled?
No, I'm fine.
And are you caught up? Like, are you a fan of Rick and Morty? You've seen all the other episodes?
No, I haven't seen all. I've seen a few, actually. Not all that many even, but I hear you guys rave about it pretty much, you know, constantly, but there's just, you know, too much stuff.
Dude, Tom, I watched it 3 times in a row and each time I picked up a little bit more this year. First of all, we said it during the main show, but best April Fool's prank ever. Best, like, yeah, you know, I've always called April Fool's Internet Christmas, and usually you get some really cool things, like, you know, they did the Pokemon Google Maps thing, and, you know, YouTube does crazy filters and all that stuff. A lot of effort goes into a lot of that stuff, and that's when April Fool's on the internet is at its best. But this level of commitment to it for a paid service like Adult Swim, Cartoon Network, to just full on give it out for free, especially after the ravenous insanity of the fan base asking for it for so long. What a savvy maneuver, but more importantly, what a classy maneuver for them to pull.
Yeah, I used to consider April Fool's Internet Christmas, and then I started to consider it Internet St. Patrick's Day, which is something I stay home and drink to avoid. and so I'm never excited about April Fool's Day anymore. It's just a bunch more people trying to be funny, and this was so much better. April Fool's by giving me something real. Just giving me something I'm going to enjoy. Like, it's a true surprise, and I love it. No, it's a super move. I jumped in on the stream. This is the other cool thing, is like, it was a stream. You couldn't do it on demand. So I jumped in, and it was close, like maybe just past the halfway mark. Nothing made sense. I was still picking up little bits and pieces, but I'm like, wait, what is that referring to? And which Rick is that? And so once it looped back around and started, it was just great to have all of the little pieces of the second half fall into place as I watched the story unfold the way it was supposed to be told. And then that second time through, that second half just sung. I'm like, oh, that's what that means now. And it was a really fun rediscovery of the episode. I love that they did it that way.
Well, and I am supposing that, you know, they were asked at the end of season two, they're like, wow, we didn't expect much, we expected more tie-in or completion of theories that were set up in season one. And they said, oh, we just never expected people to keep watching. We just thought we're going to do a couple seasons to be done. But now, you know, there's this Rick and Morty verse, you know, where it's like, we have vectors that are out there, these unanswered questions like the evil Morty out there. It was great to see for the first time all these individual threads that were set up so long ago coming back, you know, like, oh, of course, you know, all the Ricks could bust the other, you know, the Council of Ricks could bust Rick out. And of course this, and of course that. And you know, they set up the fact that I guess we're going to have a Jerry divorce arc over the season. The ending was kind of curious when all of a sudden he's frothing at the mouth, screaming about Szechuan sauce, which, by the way, somebody sent me a Google Trends map of the day and searches for Szechuan
chicken nugget
every 30 minutes. Every 30 minutes, there's another peak as people were like,
I'm telling you, McDonald's, if you're smart, you're bringing back the Szechuan sauce later this summer.
Well, and so I wonder if that is a, like, because he says a bunch of stuff like, the only reason I brought you back is because my daughter wouldn't take me back in there. And he's kind of frothing at the mouth then saying, like, almost like a sinister version of Rick. Because they set some stuff up that could be serious, right? So it's like, we see the scene where Rick almost takes a pass at becoming a mad scientist because he loves his wife so much and then watches his wife and daughter get fried in front of him, which, on the one hand, you know, you're like, oh, we're looking into his psyche. But then they also make it clear that the entire scene was a manufactured hoax so that he could inject the virus. So right. It's unclear whether or not any of that happened, although that would explain an awful lot about his nihilistic personality.
Well, and yeah, it doesn't mean that a portion of that event wasn't based on truth.
Right. Correct. And and by the way, I tuned in halfway through and immediately tuned away. And I was like, I just kept tuning in, tuning out, and just enough to see like, okay, clearly not the beginning, clearly not the beginning. And I got to a place where I would just look just at the corner and I was waiting for the title credits or the title cards to come up. And then finally I knew I could watch it from the beginning. So I experienced the whole thing straight through. And as Tondagasa in the chat points out, he kind of wished he hadn't seen the dead fly punchline first, because that was a brilliant piece of storytelling where it's like Summer's clearly desperate, like, I don't know, let's arrange these flies. Maybe that'll do something. And it's like, oh, poor thing. And then and also upon multiple reviewings, you notice little things like when it's Jerry's garage before Rick turns it back to his garage, you see that in Jerry's garage, he has a portrait picture of dumb Rick, the one that the one with the bowl cut that he says was his friend.
Uh-huh.
You also notice that every time Rick changes bodies, you have the signature slobber instantly on whoever he goes to. And so that's how you can keep track of where he was at any time.
Man, you pay way more attention to this than I do.
I'll tell you what, they put the level of detail in there that it's there to be found. It's amazing. It's so, so good.
Well, I heard an interesting lecture recently about Easter eggs and how generosity is really what makes people pay attention to things. But still, I still enjoy that level of detail. And I enjoy the level of self-awareness that they have. I loved the opening of like, and that's how I got out of prison. You wouldn't want to see that, of course.
Well, and the over-the-top Shoney's marketing in there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it makes me wonder if they – that's one of those things where it's like, hey, we want to ham-fistedly promote a random brand. Do you want it to be yours? Like, do you think Shoney's paid money for that? Or do you think
– I don't know. And that's the best part of it is that I don't know. Like, maybe they did. certainly has Shoney's in my mind in a way that I hadn't thought about in a long time, but yeah. Are there Shoney's? Are there still Shoney's?
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'll tell you what, in general, the highest of all the thumbs up, it was every bit as good as I dared hope it was going to be. The characters progressed. They have an arc. It was wild going back and remembering, oh, that's right. That's not our Summer. I mean, it's a very close Summer. But we saw actual Summer crazy and insane and killed, murdered, all of them.
For now.
I
feel like it's this Dan Harmon Productions 6 seasons in a movie. The nine more. If it takes 9 more seasons.
Oh, to get
the Szechuan chicken was the arc.
Szechuan. So yeah, that's
can I share a hot take?
Yeah.
Sure.
I didn't love the ending of that episode. I thought it seems very quick to like make a callback to that very specific moment at the end of the pilot, and do that same joke. Like, not to mention that, like,
oh, that you mean when he's blathering on? You're talking about when he's yelling at Morty?
That, and also, like, we've seen over the last, you know, two seasons that, like, Rick is very selfish and is very, like, universally minded, right? People are worth nothing, and the ends justify the means. And so we got this, like, hyper-concentrated hit of that at the end where it's like, no, I only kept y'all around because I needed to save my butt.
It was a bit much for me, too. I agree. Like it, yeah. It was not real fun for me at that moment.
And it because we've gotten, like, you know, he probably does love the kids in some form. And then just this most brutal, like, doubling down no to all of the emotional whatever from the last year, and then, yeah, just redoing the whole blabbering scene felt weird. It seems so soon into that show's run to redo that bit.
And it felt like I know it was a callback, but it felt like a step back in the development of the character, because, right, you know, we had started to see some depth and emotion and nuance in Rick, and all of a sudden all that goes back to him being just a crazy cartoon.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a meta narrative there of them realizing they can actually get away with some deeper plot lines and characterizations than they probably ever thought they could.
Yeah.
And that comes along in his dialogue. Being a little afraid to do that.
Yeah. I mean, he even mentions, right, like, the Federation's basically gone. The Council of Ricks is pretty much gone. So there's going to be all sorts of new things, which is a good sign for this coming season, because I really love that about Archer, which is, like, especially those first few seasons where every year it was like, no, we're going to have a bunch of new jokes. We're not going to make a ton of callbacks just yet. And that makes me hopeful. I need the ends to see through these means.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Well, I'll tell you what.
This is where binge watching would help, right? Because you just immediately get your answer.
Yeah.
So,
but we won't be getting that answer until later this summer.
I tell you what, though, I don't care if he's half robot. I'll take Phoenix Person any day. Like, while watching Tammy fly off on Phoenix Person and argue about what a crappy name that was, and hearing
Phoenix Person, I thought we were going to come up with a better name.
Yeah, I thought we decided on Omega Bird.
That's right, Omega Bird. All right. Shall we move on to Legion?
Yes. I just finished episode 4, so I'm going to let me bust open a crutch here to make sure I'm remembering.
Mike and I are both finished. Bryce just finished this morning, and so we're going to need you to tell us what you last saw.
Yeah.
So we don't spoil you or anyone else.
So real quick, like, is the series isn't done, is it?
No, the season.
No, just the season.
The season. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, that's what I meant, the season.
Unless you're being British, in which, yes, series one is done, Brian. Well,
so I tell you what, it makes me kind of glad that I'm taking my time, knowing that that this is all there is to savor. So I just watched episode 4 today, so I know all that. But let me remind myself of where chapter 3 picked up. Because we had finished up the memory work in chapter 2.
So chapter 3 starts with him continuing his training, and he's getting anxious, and he really wants to go and save his sister. And, oh my God, why can't I go save his sister? Oh, please, let me go save his sister. And then everyone's telling him, no, you're not ready. Don't do that. Don't do that. Do that.
Yeah. Man, I don't know remember.
That specific moment.
I'll tell you what. Let me just give general impressions. We'll talk mainly about episode 4. Episode 4 is the first time that I kind of feel like I have a sense of understanding of the language and of the I don't feel adrift in this episode. I've started to understand, we get that David's powerful and David knows that he's powerful, but by the end of episode 4, we also understand that, yes, he hears voices, but also, yes, he definitely has multiple personalities, and that the yellow-eyed man is one of them. And that end scene, you had the whole Lenny, Benny, you know, no, he was an older dude. And then he's like, well, then who's this in the mind? Episode 4, I absolutely adored the opening monologue from Jermaine Clement. I liked the way that they depicted the fact, like, it was cool to realize that I'd been hearing Jermaine Clement's voice as the house the entire time up until this, and only just now realize, like, oh, he's the locked in Oliver inside the diving suit that we're seeing in this episode, and that they're still, you know, this strange attraction between him and I forget what her name is. I liked the way they introduced the idea of the chick living inside the dude who comes out just when there's action. And I loved the set design. God, the set design is so good. Like, it is such a ridiculous design for a lighthouse that they made, and yet it just fits into this strange universe perfectly, and it's gorgeous. And I'll say this much. It is clear that they had a very limited budget for action set pieces. And so instead, to infuse emotion and dynamism into the action set pieces by cutting to not only to the physical counterpart of the Kung Fu chick, but also to in the astral plane, Jermaine Oliver dancing around to crazy music and stuff. It brought a level of gravitas and emotion to something that you know, when it did cut over to the combat was pretty weak. It was pretty bad choreography. It did not inspire, you know, the shooting of it was not dynamic and didn't feel visceral or whatever, but it didn't need to. Everything could feel dreamlike and it could still feel like it had a significant impact. Leading up to that moment at the end, when Lenny's trying to get him out of the astral plane by getting him mad, by showing him what's happening to Sid with the one-eyed dude, that was great because you see him start to seethe and you see Lenny grab on one side and you see just the hand of the yellow-eyed man. It's clear, like, oh, crap, they are a team at times, right? When they are united in purpose, I'll bet he's unfathomably powerful in those moments. And my guess is, much like a Hulk rage, it doesn't always happen, but when it does, it's something to see.
Here's the problem. I almost can't say anything to your comments, right, Mike? Because so many of these things about his personality makeup are going to be answered. And I don't know if they're answered in episode 5 per se, but like, you're just about to find out more about what makes him work and why he works that way.
Right. Well, and I'm certain that's the case, and they've done a good job of giving answers. They've done a good job of giving answers and making the world concrete enough underneath you, and yet always having, you know, more interesting mystery to unfold. I thought I'm glad the Sid and Perm Leprechaun guy, I'm glad the body switch just lasted, you know, got wrapped up by the end of the episode. I thought that was a suitable way for him to get away to fight another day. It's so good. It's so good. I handed someone $20 on Friday. I said, you're going to buy this right now. I'm going to hand you this $20. And if it's not great, then just don't give it back. But I'm going to see you next week and you're going to hand this $20 bill back to me. Like, it's so good.
They just spent it on booze.
That's fine. Yeah, it turns out it's just a random homeless person on the street. He's like, but I don't have. I'm like, no, go.
I don't even have a Roku. Mike, where can you go with this? Because the one thing is, yes, I agree with the lighthouse scene. That was so good, because I wasn't sure about them going out into public and imitating things. And the way they took me on that journey to the lighthouse worked really well for me. Mike, do you have any other thoughts on where we are so far?
So far where Brian is. I kind of like the... even to that point, the kind of jumping around stylistically, like if I remember episode 3 kind of went, you know, horror rather than the earlier episode. Like, I think you guys were describing it as, you know, Wes Anderson kind of stylistic. And they aren't afraid of changing things up like that episode to episode. In fact, I was talking about this with my wife. I didn't think about it till the last couple episodes. This isn't, you know, anything content wise, but does the opening of the show change every time? Like their opening Legion.
They don't always play the whole opening music, I think, if I remember right.
I feel like the graphics are even, like, they do something different with the opening. It's just like details like that. That just the you know, this thought they're putting into it. Maybe you think that money should have gone toward action scenes, but
but I don't. And understand, like I can recognize that they're limited in a thing and still think that stylistically they've more than compensated for it. Like I would hate to see like a well-crafted John Woo style action set piece. I think tonally that they've set it up in such a way where I'm more than willing to forgive it.
Yeah. Yeah,
I also really like the astral plane. I like that device.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think it was represented well. And I think it's awesome that, you know, television and movie fans, you know, people who haven't read the comic books, really only got introduced to the astral plane just last fall with Doctor Strange. And now we're seeing it as a device. And if you saw Doctor Strange, you're like, oh, that's the place that Doctor Strange goes.
Yeah. All right. Anything else before we move along to The Expanse?
Man, no, just I'm going to do my best. I don't know that I will burn all the way through it. I think I'm going to savor this. I've really enjoyed just taking a leisurely pace, watching two a week. It's because they're just that good.
All right. Let's talk about The Expanse, Episode 10, Season 2, wherein Avasarala really wants to meet with Bobby Draper, and Bobby Draper really wants to take a walk outside and see the ocean.
Yeah, it was sweet. Bobby Draper, we saw a different side of Bobby Draper. We saw her completely guard down, adrift in a world that doesn't make sense to her. And it's kind of funny because my daughter will tune out from time to time, and she'll just, you know, go into those reveries that only young teenagers can go into. And watching Bobby Draper walk through the underbelly of what I assume is what Los Angeles. Where does this take place?
New York.
Okay. She conveyed that very, very well, and it's like you felt the weight of the gravity and all that stuff. I loved the fact that they were so straightforward with the second in command guy just saying like, hey, we're working on a proto molecule. Better you know now. You can be mad at me later. We got to deal with this. And then it felt honest and authentic in a way I could honestly see that going down.
Yeah, I was actually curious if you were going to take it that way, because, again, knowing that probably was coming, I wasn't sure how it played, because it could feel like a cheap out of like, oh, I guess I'll just admit. But I thought they executed it really well. I also started to get a crush on Bobby Draper when I saw her like just, you know, MacGyvering that window and then jumping out and walking down into the ocean as a Martian who shouldn't even be able to walk on this planet, and then just braving her way through the underworld and losing some confidence because she's way out of her element, but persevering and figuring out how to get to the ocean. And then still, after all of that, standing up to Avasarala and showing that she still has loyalty.
Yeah, well, and getting clobbered on the way down, that was painful, right? To watch her just fall down story after story like that. And then, and it's like, well, is she going to move? And then she's just like, meh, whatevs, and gets up and starts walking. That was amazing.
That's Earth gravity, which had to make the fall even worse for her.
Sure, sure. Well, and she's not a tiny person either, right?
Yeah, it's, right.
What did you think of all the stuff? Oh, man, Amos just cutting to the quick with that chicken crap. He's like, we're not playing your chicken game. Here's some chicken. I'm going to beat you upside the head with it. Now you're going to find the little girl.
Well, and also Holden making a mistake by not letting Naomi manage Amos. Come on, Holden. You know, Naomi knows how to manage Amos. You don't hold her back from that. That's dangerous.
Yeah.
I kind of like that after his talk with Naomi, I think the week before, about I need you to pull me back to who I am, you know, to remind me, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That doesn't wrap it up and say, okay, I'm back to being Captain America or whatever. You know, he clean cut guy. He still kind of struggles with his, Jack Bauerdom. You know, how far is it okay to go to get these things done that are, you know, important long term?
Yeah.
And I also, even though it's just your ending cliffhanger, I adore the sequence of Alex playing around to keep himself occupied on the Rocinante.
Oh, dude, I love it. That was
listening to I'm a cover of I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry.
Texan as hell, got nothing to do, sitting around getting drunk on the
figuring
spaceship.
Out cool ways to get drunk.
Well, and
right?
plus also like you could tell that practiced way to drink gravity based beverages in zero G, where he's got his hand over it and just drinking here or there. I half expected him to throw cans and start shooting them, like with a six shooter or something.
Seriously. And of course, you know, the big cliffhanger is that they have now restricted all flights in and out of Ganymede, which means he can't go pick them up, which means they're stuck there and could get revealed. And that's not good.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how, you know, I don't know, bated breath I am in terms of that particular cliffhanger. But I'm very much enjoying everybody working together as a team. I'm glad that we got progress on finding the little girl. We got confirmation that she's alive. Obviously she's important. Bobby Draper is a fully formed character in my mind now. I feel like I've gotten all the depth and all the angles on it. Chris Jen just gets more and more interesting. I love the fact that she shows up and just is like, hey, I'm just going to lay this at your feet. They're coming here any minute. I want to know. Give me a call. Bye.
Well, and the thing I love the most about that scene is they didn't wrap it up with a neat little bow. Like, Christian didn't get an answer out of Bobby. She wanted to push further, but she's like, yeah, gotta go. Sorry.
Right. Right. No, it was great. It was really, really good.
Any other thoughts, Mike?
I was just going to ask you guys a question. Is it, you know, the big shock to everybody that, you know, nobody's sacred, that, you know, Miller was dead, you know, landing on Venus. Just from having watched so many different things, I can't admit that somebody's dead unless I see them dismembered, the parts run through a wood chipper, and those pieces dissolved in acid. Yeah. If I don't see it, I keep thinking something, you know, the protomolecule is, you know, still there. He was interacting with a protomolecule.
Yep. Bonnie said the exact same thing last night. She was just like, well, I mean, there's a giant pool of protomolecule floating on the surface of Venus. And, you know, we've already seen Julie Mao come back. So I don't know.
Yeah. Right.
So you think a Venus-sized Miller's coming?
Yes, I think it's Godzilla Miller. And he just says, bring me scotch. A lake of scotch. The Mohawk
Well, we've got a few more episodes, three more episodes left in this season to go. So we'll see what happens. We're definitely going to find out something on Venus. They've been giving us that. We'll see if Bobby Draper and Avasarala, anything comes from that. For fruition of that, and how the hell is Holden and team going to get off Ganymede? Those are where we left it. Let's move on to episode 12, season 5 of Justified. At the beginning of this episode, Brian, I thought, you know, this has been a real confusing season, but you've made it clear. The last two episodes are going to be about the standoff around Daryl Crowe. The marshals are going after Daryl Crowe, and the Mexican mafia is going after Daryl Crowe, and Boyd is in the middle of that with Wynn Duffy trying to manage it, and that's where we're going. I finally get it. This is exciting. And of course, they undid that like halfway through this episode.
I hated the prison scenes less this time than I think at any other point leading up to it. Like, through sheer perseverance, they've gotten me to a place where, you know, the reluctant kingpin of Ava is somewhat interesting. But it's still, I mean, it's just a low rent Orange is the New Black, and it's like it's hard for me to want to invest in any of it. When I think too hard about it. If I don't think too hard about it, I really enjoy hapless, enraged Dewey Crow, like just trying to make his way, getting busted, stealing gas and getting shot at and run off and all that stuff and just can't do anything right.
Siphoning the gas, and the lady offered him a sandwich, which he's, you know, naive enough to be like, oh, yeah, that sounds great.
That'd be great. And he starts to ask for specific, cut off the crust or whatever. But meanwhile, you know, Raylan still continues to be kind of a boring blank slate this entire time. He's beige as hell.
Yeah, and he's not, right? I mean, we know he's not. We know when you peel back that beige, there's an angry red. Especially missing in this episode is something around art. right? We left Art unconscious.
Art's still just out of it.
And this whole episode was artless.
See what you did there.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that it was justified. So I want more from it because it's given me more before. This is not a horrible season. It's not a horrible episode, really. It did some interesting things. I'm still interested in Danny Crowe, and I think, you know, the position they're trying to force him into in regards to Kendall and his maneuvering is interesting. But there's just, maybe I'm not concentrating enough, but there just seems to be too many little tendrils of plot out there.
Well, and especially like I am not seeing any way for them to all nest together and in a satisfying way. It's going to continue to be these random threads that we kind of chase down, and we get less and less of any kind of core narrative.
We only got one more episode this season.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But meanwhile, the big thing at the end is that they turn up the heat on Win Duffy and they steal his trailer. And so now you got
impound. Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. He doesn't have a trailer anymore.
Doesn't have a trailer to hang his hat in.
But maybe they'll stick the landing. I don't know. I don't want to just be poo-pooing it because there's a reason a lot of people say they like this season. I'm just not seeing it.
And maybe I just needed to follow it more closely.
There's not any hidden deep nuance that you were missing because you weren't paying attention.
You weren't paying attention enough either.
I was paying more attention. I'm calmer than you are.
It's not Rick and Morty.
Are you? Well, that is it for this episode of Spoiler in Time. Once again, folks, if you haven't yet, go to patreon.com/crumbdumb and sign up and support the best movie draft analysis that you can get on the internet. Thank you, Mike Range, for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you guys for having me on.
Heck yes.
Good luck to both in the draft.
Thank you very much. We will talk about how awesome the Smurfs did next week.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.